Hello there. This is Grim from the future. What you're about to listen to is a live recording of Two Idiots and a Dog at Wild Wild West Con 2023. We had a live studio audience for the first time, so this will be a live recording that you're about to listen to. As such, there are certain external factors involved in the background noise that we were unable to isolate out, so please bear that in mind accordingly. Special thanks to everybody who came to the panel. It was great to see you all. And this was actually a lot of fun, so I hope we get to do it again later.
So, we are Two Idiots and a Dog. The two idiots are here. The dog is only here in photograph form because, as we said, she is not allowed at the convention.
She's here in spirit.
She is here in spirit.
But who are we?
I'm Zolgar.
I'm Grim.
And we are a totally original podcast idea.
We're a couple of ostensibly white guys talking about media analysis.
Yeah. Totally original. No one's ever done it before.
Totally niche.
And we decided to do this because...
So basically, he and I would sit at home, because we're roommates in outside of the podcast, and BS back and forth. And some of the conversations we would have, I would sit there and be like, man, I wish we were recording this. We should do a podcast. And then one day he was like, okay. And now here we are.
Yeah.
So this is all my fault. I apologize.
But on to the topic at hand. Steampunk in pop culture.
Yep. So welcome to the first ever Two Idiots and a Dog live.
Yay. All right. Hold your applause. Throw money. Look, our con budget... I blew our entire con budget buying empanadas.
You see what I have to put up with? He bought two empanadas. Now we're going to have to file for bankruptcy.
All right. So, of course, the first thing we need to do is define what we mean by steampunk and pop culture. By pop culture, we're talking specifically about things that are going to be mainstream or semi-mainstream media.
That type of thing that you can kind of osmose through the cultural zeitgeist. So you don't have to have watched it to know the name Power Rangers.
Yeah.
You don't need to have watched the movies to know what someone means when they say Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's pop culture.
Exactly. Now, the bigger question is, what do we mean when we say steampunk?
dude, we only got like 50 minutes. We ain't got time for that.
Yeah, so... We actually discussed ahead of time how to define steampunk for the purpose of this panel, and we came to a conclusion. It's impossible.
Cannot be done.
No matter what definition of steampunk you use... Please. Thank you.
We would always find something or someone with an opinion that would break the mold, or a property that would break the mold, no matter what we came up with. Weird, exceptional technology, and we started throwing other names at each other that absolutely were not steampunk. But could we tell you why they weren't steampunk? No.
Yeah. So
they just weren't.
Yeah, and it's like you all start dealing with things that have steampunk elements and aspects of them that are definitely steampunk, but the media itself isn't really steampunk. A great example of that is Back to the Future 3, where you've got some heavy steampunk elements in like what Doc Brown does, especially that train. I mean, that train is amazing, and I love it, and that is an iconic steampunk item. But otherwise, the movie isn't really steampunk. So it's like there's so much you can do. And one of the aspects of this that was kind of a big thing for us is how odd it is that there's so little mainstream media that is fully steampunk.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
For movies, Wild Wild West is pretty much the only "this is a steampunk movie" that we could think of.
Yeah.
I have heard of it. I don't think I've actually seen it.
I have not seen it.
So Vernia, anything that's Vernian is definitely in the realm of steampunk because it is Victorian science fiction. But here's the funny thing about 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. the Nautilus is a nuclear submarine. So Jules Verne defined a nuclear submarine before it was even a concept. So, has some steampunk elements.
Steampunk elements for sure.
Do not get me started on how terrible that movie is. I love it, but it's terrible.
It is so bad.
I think the comics are worse, but did I say that out loud?
You did. Okay. Moving on. We have a Ooh. Quintessential steampunk right there.
I forgot that they did an animated movie of that. I need to see if it's on HBO.
They've got a one coming up that's going to be set in the 20s too.
Yeah, I've heard of that. That's
although that one's going to be a little more like Eldritch Horror Batman, but it looks really good. So steampunk adjacent.
Might even be drifting into diesel punk in the 20s.
A little bit.
So another piece of media that is fairly mainstream, that's definitely a solidly steampunk piece of media in the video game world, BioShock Infinite.
Yeah.
The entire BioShock franchise, it kind of hovers around steampunk, but Infinite was like,
It took it up here.
Yeah, it was like, we're just going to make a steampunk video game.
Yeah. There's lots of other properties that have elements. Warehouse 13, some of the gizmos and gadgets and weird stuff they keep in the warehouse is classic steampunk tech. But to say the show itself is steampunk doesn't feel fully honest.
Yeah. There's steampunk tech to it, but the show...
Yeah, and we're not trying to gatekeep here.
No, we're totally gatekeeping steampunk. We too are the complete arbiters of everything that is steampunk.
I don't know him. He just walked in and sat down in front of the mic just now. I've never met this man before in my life. Yes, I am all on board. I am so looking forward to it because Crafty Survival is my jam. And Eldritch Weirdness is my jam. And then you stack the steampunk layer on top of it, and I'm like, I'm home.
Yeah, I've looked at that one.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I've looked at that one. It doesn't look like it's quite my jam, but I would still give it a try if I get a chance to. There's also another one that's coming out. It's more clockwork, the kind of clockwork Souls-like. Is it Steel Rising?
That's been out for a while.
Okay.
Steel Rising's been out for a while. Lies of P is coming up, and that's another one.
Yeah, that's the other one I was thinking of.
That one I am also looking forward to because I really like Souls-likes. A lot. Maybe more than is healthy.
And...
not only steampunk, but they're definitely pulp.
Those are very pulp, but they're kind of pulp adventure. There's going to be slight aspects of steampunk to the Brendan Fraser Mummy movies, but
and pulp and steampunk, in my personal opinion, have coexisted and borrowed from each other heavily a lot, almost siblings of a sort.
Ooh, Van Helsing. That's a good one.
That's a good one. Steampunk elements for sure, especially the gadgetry.
Yeah, it's very steampunk elements, but, you know, I think I would actually go ahead and call Van Helsing a light steampunk because...
Steampunk light, yeah. It's...
And yeah. If we're going with that, then there's also the Hansel and Gretel Vampire Hunter, or the Monster Hunter
movie.
That
one was also right up there.
Yeah.
I've seen enough clips. Yes.
I have not seen enough of it to be able to
Absolutely.
Answer.
They Murdoch Mysteries, have you ever watched that? I have not.
Fascinating show. It's set in Canada. It's murder, like almost like a
murder
mystery, but it's like the turn of the century, and characters that come in have included Tesla. And, I mean, you know, there's a lot of science that is very steampunk-like.
Hmm.
And some that's predicting later.
In the 1970s semi-series that used to be on the NBC Mystery Movies called Heck Ramsey.
No, that's a little before my time, but... Apparently, we're getting a watch list from this panel.
Of course, also for TV shows, there's one that's it didn't quite get enough love for its time, but it had a lot of heavy steampunk elements, And of course, it starred the King of Bee himself, Bruce Campbell, in Adventures of Briscoe County Jr.
The chin.
I mean, the man wrote his first book, If Chins Could Kill.
Uh-huh. If anybody could figure it out, it'd be one of his characters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess the main thing we're going with here is the fact that classifying steampunk isn't necessarily a black and white affair, and it's always going to be at least a little subjective.
Yeah.
There is no objective set in stone definition for steampunk. We tried bandying a few things about, like alternate history, weird tech, but it never really felt definitive.
Yeah, because like you go alternate tech, or sorry, alternate history, and you rule out any of the media that it's after the fall of modern civilization, after modern technology stops working, and they go back to the steam tech. I mean, honestly, Pritch, all of Abney Park's extended world deals with that kind of world. So if we said it has to be alternate history, we would basically be saying Abney Park isn't steampunk, at which point we would get run out of this con with pitchforks and torches.
I mean, we might anyway. The night is young.
True. did everyone remember their pitchforks and torches?
I know.
Oh, wait. He's got a Tommy gun.
There's a vendor for them, I'm certain. We've got several Nerf guns sitting in the boardroom.
Yeah, this is a steampunk con. There are weapons.
Point taken.
We do.
We don't talk about books a lot because neither of us have a lot of time to read these days, but we do discuss books sometimes.
Doesn't Butcher have?
Yeah.
Yes. I still haven't read it yet, which is a shame because I'm a big fan of Butcher.
I've seen that one. I've seen like previews of it, but I haven't actually watched it yet. Aeronauts Windlass, it's a really fun book. I am eager for the second one. Also, the audiobook is great. The narrator does a great voice for the cat. Yes, by the way, it has a talking cat, so that makes it better.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I have both a cat and a dog, so, you know.
And also, there is certain aspects, not a lot, but certain aspects of getting into it with Butcher's other series. Not yeah. Dresden, but
Codex Alera. Yep.
Though Codex Alera is not really steampunk.
It's got a few elements.
It's got a few light elements.
It's not hard steampunk.
It's definitely not a. It's definitely not what you would consider first thing you would think of if you said. Yeah,
it's. I mean, it's Roman Pokemon.
Yeah, it's Roman Legion meets Pokemon, which is.
It's Roman Pokemon. Got to catch them all.
That man is crazy. He really is. No, I agree even more so with the way Dresden's been going. I might be done with Dresden after Battleground.
I'm not, but we've had that conversation repeatedly. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Dresden Files. Ironically enough, I was introduced to it by the really bad TV show.
I love the TV show, but I...
It wasn't Dresden Files, though. I still maintain Paul Blackthorne can play Dresden anytime he wants. He was one of the standouts of that show. But back on topic a little bit here.
There are a lot of other great books that are very steampunk. I mean, Gail Carriger, I think her name is. Yeah, I'm terrible with names. She has...
The Parasol
Protectorate series.
We're at a steampunk con. There's an artist gallery right over there full of authors hawking their books.
You've also got, for like comics, you have Boston Metaphysical Society. Yes. Mm-hmm. Phil Folio's Girl Genius.
Yep. Girl Genius is one we actually discussed when we were planning this episode.
Yeah. And of course, I mean, Folio is great. He's a character.
I have fallen way behind on Girl Genius and should catch up at some point. But good stuff.
And yeah, so there are a lot of books that have either that are fully steampunk or have steampunk elements. Not many of them get to the point of what you would consider mainstream novels, unfortunately, because getting mainstream novels is tricky these days.
Mainstream anything steampunk seems to be really hard to do. Like,
there have also been individual episodes of television series. For example, like for Batman the Animated Series, you had show that was featured Jonah Hex and Richard Rule in a steampunk setting. You also had any Doctor Who episode that has the Paternoster gang.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you've got that.
But really, in mainstream, mostly that's what we get is we get these episodes or these elements. A fully steampunk, and again, we're not gatekeeping steampunk here, but like something that is built to be steampunk in from the ground up and stay steampunk is not that common in mainstream media for some reason.
Which is really odd considering, I mean, for what was about from 2005 to 2015, steampunk was big. I mean, it's still popular.
But, I mean, we're at a con dedicated to it.
Yeah, but it's like it, you know, it was really big for that period. I mean, you couldn't go pretty much any place that was even slightly alternate cultures, just slightly, without there being steampunk stuff. You know, Hot Topic sold stuff. Spirit Halloween had a whole bunch of steampunk stuff. But still, in that time frame, there wasn't a lot of steampunk, of full-on steampunk media.
Why does it have to be full-on?
Well,
I mean, so look at Firefly. Now, Firefly is kind of Cowboys pioneers in space, but a lot of the clothing and the sets were very steampunk-like.
There is a reason that Firefly is extremely popular with the steampunk crowd, but could you really call Firefly steampunk?
Well, I would call it sci-fi with a steampunk thread running to it.
Yeah. So I would tend to personally call it sci-fi with a Western aesthetic because, you know, Western is the American Old West is the American equivalent of Victorian England.
Yeah.
So
here's just a quick tangent for you, courtesy of Tumblr. The Meiji Restoration, Victorian era, Wild West, and the end of the Golden Age of piracy all overlap. There's a lot of room to play in there, and I'm kind of surprised nobody's done it yet.
Really fascinating thing, not to jump away from Firefly, because that's like my thing.
Freaking Browncoats.
Hey, listen, Arizona Browncoats is a great charity that should be supported and loved by everyone.
They're weirdos. Who likes the Arizona Browncoats here?
I have heard of it. It is.
So it was an old comic panel originally that then was kind of converted into graphic novels, originating in, I think, the French or Belgian language. It recently had a 3D animated movie that explored one of the major episodes of it. It's kind of fascinating because it's set, I think, during the time period. It sort of set in the 1930s, boys were supposed to be leading up to Thomas Ford having two, right? So, but there's a really interesting reference in the comics where it actually goes back to the Steamman, if you guys are familiar with that, which was a novel from the 19th century with, I looked up the name, Edward Ellis wrote it, and it was a science fiction dynamo about an inventor who created intelligent sentient automaton that was powered by a steam engine, which I think was featured in some of the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen comics also. And that's a really interesting thing that spreads into different points of pop culture. And it's actually like it falls with Jules Verne, where it's proto steampunk.
Yeah.
Sci-fi.
Yeah.
But steam engine is a reoccurring thing. They actually just, Gaslight was recently relaunched a new Steam Man series
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if also, years ago, Neil Gaiman wrote a comic that featured a basically a steam-powered clockwork man who was Mr. Hero.
Yeah.
Also going for clockwork, you have Daniel H. Wilson's novel Clockwork Dynasty, which featured a sapient clockwork automaton. It's a weird book. I liked it, but...
Yeah, there's lots of examples, and you have, through this conversation thread, which is part of why I wanted to do this live show in the first place, because you guys are throwing some great stuff at us that we never even thought of, because, hey, we're just a couple of idiots. It's right there in the show title, people.
I'm hoping that the mics are picking all of it up.
I really am. But you have put a thought in my head with this conversation, and I want to pose a question now that may or may not spark debate. And that question is... Is Frankenstein steampunk?
Ooh.
It's the James Bond 1931 movie, probably. Because you've got the technology in the form of the table and the bringing up to with the lightning hitting things in the shooting there.
But you've got Mary Shelley writing the original novel when she wrote it, so it,
that's steampunk the same way Jules Verne can be steampunk. It's like those are the origin books that steampunk built upon.
The
one that comes to mind is Robert Louis Stevenson's Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, because even though it's chemically based,
you know,
it's still technology.
He's not wrong.
And in that regard also, H.G. Wells' Invisible Man.
Ooh.
I mean, because that was also
how much of H.G. Wells' entire catalog?
Not
The Time Machine.
The Time Machine. I mean, you could even go so far as to possibly even argue War of the Worlds, even though War of the Worlds it does not deal with alternate tech for humans, but you still have... I mean, it's still Victorian science fiction.
Yeah.
I'm going to put a really interesting kind of side segue with War of the Worlds. I would make the argument that War of the Worlds is a farm piece for diesel pump.
Definitely.
Definitely.
The Gibson concept of cyberpunk, which is what all of these terms are derived from.
Which then brings us around to, not to crib off of another panel in the brochure, but where do you draw the line on the various punks?
Right.
So what punk is it?
That one really, War of the Worlds, you have it's the diesel equivalent of the high tech, low life struggle of survival against a greater entity, right? And that's that was the foundational concept behind cyberpunk. Steampunk is, I think, everyone's kind of in that same way.
Can I throw a weird?
Speaking of H.G. Wells, another one that might be considered steampunk is the Nicholas Meyer movie Time After Time in 1979, which had H.G. Wells and Jack the Ripper going.
Oh, that movie was so terrible. I loved it.
Of course you've seen it.
How about Sherlock Holmes? I mean, the original Sherlock Holmes.
I mean, these days, absolutely.
Science, forensics that he's doing... in a time when they didn't really do those things. So you do have the science elements. And there's lots of, steam trains and what have you as they travel.
I'm not sure I would use... definitely a lot of overlap with Sherlock Holmes and steampunk elements, but I'm not sure that... I'm not sure it quite goes... outside of reality enough?
I'm going to go ahead and say, retroactively, yes. Because it now that we are at the point where we are as a culture and with science and technology, we look back on it and it lines up perfectly with what we consider most steampunk to be. Now, was it written to be that? No, I don't think so. But retroactively... sure. And because we've had this conversation before, can books be reclassified retroactively? Granted, it was mostly when we were arguing over Jurassic Park. but it does pose the question, is steampunk limited to what it was written intending to be steampunk?
I mean, if we do that, if we say that, then I mean, then Jules Verne can't be steampunk. H.P. Wells can't. Can someone pop the door open? We got someone trying to get in. And you can go ahead and leave it open because the kids are gone.
So I think retroactively calling something steampunk here is valid, because that means that Jules Verne, Mary Shelley, a lot of the H.G. Wells, a lot of these stories that weren't necessarily written to be steampunk, they were written to be an advanced form of existing technology to the authors at the time.
They were science fiction.
But because our science fiction has advanced so far past that, we now look at those and go, these have steampunk elements, these are steampunk. So yes, I believe retroactively.
And then you look at, again, staying with Conan Doyle, here is Professor Challenger novels.
I have never even heard of those, actually.
We are very poorly read. We're idiots.
Yeah. Journey to the Center of the Earth, that one I would definitely classify as a steampunk novel, because that is pure science fiction at that point, because there's, for the time, it was kind of possible, but...
We know better now.
Yeah.
We know that the Hollow Earth does not exist. It is a staple of fiction at this point, but it does not actually exist. We have the science to be able to go, no. But, that's where the fiction part of science fiction comes into it, right? Mm-hmm. That's what makes it fun.
I think it's really fascinating because a lot of the series that have been brought up here that are older, that raise the question, is it steampunk or something? Because we think it's steampunk. I think it's fascinating because they're all things that, if you look at them in the context that they were written, they're stylized. But then if you look at the fact that, like, Journey to the Center of the Earth has dozens of derivative works that are written, and like they were written by modern authors, and that does qualify them into retrofuturism.
Yeah, and another one that you can kind of get into with that is The Island of Dr. Moreau. Mm-hmm.
Argument could be made.
Because one of the things that you run into a lot is science fiction, especially old school science fiction, before we started getting into space opera and things like that are also classified as science fiction, it was speculative fiction based off of an idea of what science could do. And today we know that Island of Dr. Moreau is impossible without some very weird stuff happening.
Same with Jurassic Park, which is what sparked our spirited debates behind closed doors.
He's a big fan. A little bit.
Yeah, and you see this in lots of things like not exactly steampunk, but maybe diesel or atom punk. I can't remember the full name, but Captain Whatever in the World of Tomorrow.
Sky Captain
in the World of Tomorrow.
Yeah, that one.
Very, very diesel / atom punk, but it's still got that same pulpy, steampunky feel to it in the story structure and the way things are presented.
And The Rocketeer.
The Rocketeer, oh, definitely. Around the World in 80 Days.
I was just going to say Around the World in 80 Days because it's kind of like the Great Race in terms of, the challenges and the different ways they're traveling and stuff. And it does have definitely steampunk elements.
I
Yeah.
If you look at the household and the inventions and even some of the clothing styles of the characters, a lot of these characters are, they've been acting to the archetype of like a punk culture for their era almost, right?
Yeah.
I would even go so far as like Rabbit Hole Baby Days fits the Gibson cyberpunk definition,
especially the version with the attendants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And what I think is fascinating is like when I was making a costume, when I was designing the costumes for Gaslight Expo, that's the movie that I watched for primary inspiration for costume design.
And yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
I have a
flip side of that, one that is fringe of pop culture, and I want to hear his opinion on is Steamboy, the anime.
I have not watched it yet.
I have not seen it either, actually. So, but you know, that's a good question. Potentially. It's nice.
Now here.
Yeah, even better.
It's called Steamboy. Yep. It's about the son of an inventor who invents an ultra pressurized steam chamber to fuel engines. And creates a technology race based entirely around the super fast.
Yeah. Speculation like that is always interesting and definitely carries the themes and spirit of steampunk, regardless of if after viewing we're like, yeah, that was steampunk, or no, that wasn't steampunk. But again, also on the flip side, we're also not the ultimate gatekeepers, as we said earlier. There is no objective steampunk classification because everybody has their own opinion on what steampunk is.
And you start thinking in terms of with anything dealing with alternate history. Here's another one for you. Is Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter steampunk?
So personally, I would say no,
because there is nothing technology-wise. There's no elements to it that are science. There's no science fiction elements to it. He doesn't use like funky weaponry like some power crossbow or things like that. Everything about it was written to be, it was created to seem like it could have actually happened, which is one of the things I love about it. Yeah, it's written to be more of a hidden history than an alternate history. So I wouldn't classify it as steampunk personally.
Yeah. There's a fairly recent video game, actually, that I think fits now that I think about it, and that's going to be Evil West. Weird technology, Wild West era. He's hunting down vampires, and these vampires are super weird and creepy and cool. But some of the stuff he's got is like a lightning gauntlet and weird souped up guns that we didn't have at the time and stuff like that. So yeah.
Now here's another one. Thinking of video games and kind of going for elements.
Yeah.
Is a Silver Shroud steampunk? I had to do it.
All right, fine. You know what? I'm going to take us in a wild ride. Are you ready for this?
No.
Well, I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to pose a question. And I don't know if this is the crowd to answer it or not, but I'm going to pose it anyway. Because we keep talking about the retrofuturism, but there is a property that is both futuristic in that it takes place after us, but it's retro in the fact that the technology has degraded horribly. Is Warhammer 40K steampunk?
Get out of this convention. I would closer to call it diesel. Yeah. Actually, what I would call it is heresy punk.
Heresy punk. He's not wrong. I mean, these people don't even have hydraulics. They open their airlocks with giant gears and chains. I've often joked that if I woke up inside the 40K universe, I would either become IT for the Adeptus Mechanicus or killed for heresy in 2 days. No in between. Yeah.
More grounded in reality, less high tech. It tends to have magic influence, though, or supernatural influence. I think maybe that's where that sits more solidly. It's got kind of supernatural influence, it's the correct era. There probably are some liberties taken technologically with it to a point, but they're really
no.
Yeah, I could see calling it gas lamp.
Yeah, gas lamp and steampunk are definitely cousins.
Yeah, they're
close cousins.
I would even go so far as saying they're probably siblings, maybe step siblings.
Quite possibly.
There's a very, very big overlap.
Or maybe gas lamp is the child of steampunk.
Or maybe steampunk is the child of gas lamp.
Yeah, we go. I mean, you mentioned it, so I know.
Now we're gonna start going chicken egg at this point.
Well, I go every year. I live in San Diego, so it's like you might. But anyway, it is definitely a steampunk convention. But its name obviously says that the gas lamp books are part of that genre.
Yeah, because yeah. And I mean, also, isn't that the gas lamp district in San Diego where it takes place?
Yeah. No, it doesn't usually take place downtown. It moves around to
okay.
Hotel buildings. But we do have a gas lamp district in San Diego.
Which is so gorgeous.
One
of the hotels down there is just stunning. But that's beside the point.
Yeah. So extrapolating a bit, I mean, we could sit here and try to classify media properties all day if it's steampunk or not, right? That's kind of the point, is showing that we could do that.
Is this podcast steampunk?
No.
Just put some gears on it. Hey, put the torches down.
Don't forget goggles. You gotta have goggles.
Say goggles! Say to nothing!
Gears, goggles, and maybe some completely pointless blinky lights.
What about mice?
What's that?
Robot mice. Robot mice, yeah.
Robot mice?
Robot critters.
Robot mice. Yeah, okay. Robot mice. Yeah,
because I mean,
it's even in one of the biggest MMOs of all time that I'm not going to give my personal opinion on because it's not a good opinion. World of Warcraft has all sorts of steampunky automatons and tech in it between the gnomes and the goblins.
Well, and then also automatons actually reminded me of another property that, I mean, it's vaguely steampunk, but it has major aspects, and it focused on automatons, but not advanced automatons. True automatons. Hugo.
Mm.
Because that movie focused on the actual automatons of the era. The writing machines that basically it was a wind-up that it would write a message because it was so intricately created.
What about Big O?
I have not watched Big O in so long, I could not answer that question.
I could see both arguments for Big O. We really don't know what powers Big O. But the world around Big O. Anime, it's always going to be hit or miss with anime because it's so...
Yeah, if you're not familiar, Big O is a very weird mecha anime.
I mean, I've seen some people make an argument for Full Metal Alchemist.
Full Metal Alchemist, I would classify as steampunk before I classified Big O as steampunk, I think. Because you've got the right aesthetics for the era.
Yep.
You've got automail, which,
yep.
I mean, I'm sorry, automail is steampunk.
Automail is steampunk as hell.
And honestly, if you start bringing...
They have trains.
They've got trains. But also, there is a lot of steampunk that starts bringing in some form of supernatural or magic. Usually...
And the thing to remember is that alchemy in Fullmetal Alchemist is not magic.
It's a science.
It is a science. It has rules.
Yeah, but... You know, you'll find oftentimes things like either aether or magic or spiritual elements. So yeah. Bringing in something like alchemy, it still works. So yeah, I would actually definitely say that Full Metal Alchemist is steampunk.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, again, like I said, we could sit here and debate classification of media all day. Because steampunk is not set in stone, because the individual elements of steampunk are not what makes steampunk steampunk. And so, that's what makes it so subjective.
So what makes steampunk steampunk?
That's the fun of it. Like,
hey,
I said,
Zach, it's what makes steampunk steampunk?
If I'm going to say what makes steampunk steampunk, I'm going to say that it's
That's not a bad one either. And that's the thing about, though, is because there is no concrete definition of steampunk that's objective and set in stone, the beautiful thing is you're both right. You're both right. Both of your definitions are completely valid and accurate. And I think that's part of the point here is... Steampunk is steampunk because we love it.
Steampunk is steampunk because we say it's steampunk.
And we love it.
Avatar the Last Airbender, the first series, I would say that it's not really quite steampunk yet.
But we hit Korra.
But we go Legend of Korra, and what the Earth Nation starts doing, it is steampunk.
Now,
I mean,
and look at the Fire Nation's drill tank.
Yeah, now... What's really interesting is we are getting an Earth Avatar. And if we follow the progression, that avatar is going to be another era forward. So I'm really curious to see what they do with that.
Yeah.
Because you're not right. The seeds, especially the Korra era, and some of the Fire Nation war weapons from the Hundred Years' War, definitely fall within steampunk purview. And there is one element of media, though, that we've largely ignored. And possibly with good reason, because it's going to be the hardest to pin down.
Music?
Music. I mean, we can sit here and go, okay, The Cog is Dead, Abney Park.
But those are all bands that have a steampunk aesthetic and have steampunk elements to their music. But what is steampunk music?
I mean, even Steam Powered Giraffe is...
There is an alternative way of looking at it in that you can also have modern music being performed with instruments of the past. Like, you look at Vitamin String Quartet, which does the Beatles in the form of violins and strings.
Yeah, or I mean, another one that you can actually look at for that is the Mongolian metal band The Who, because they mix modern instruments and
classic Mongolian instrumentation,
ancient Mongolian and instruments, and throat singing. It's, I mean, is The Who steampunk?
I don't know, but we're going to go back to Bioshock Infinite for a moment, because some of the music you run into is like barbershop quartets doing modern pop songs, because they can hear the music through cracks in reality, and then they adapt it to the music of their era. Have you, you've never heard any of this?
I may have.
Oh, we are Googling some stuff later.
And if you start going into weird things like that, how about the Gregorian chant group that does
love pop those music? Guys. Love right. those guys. Love those guys. Yep, Bardcore. I know all about Bardcore. It's for me, steampunk is about juxtaposition. It's about that blend of what we know, what we knew, and what could be. But the same could be said of other genres, meaning it's not a defining characteristic of steampunk per se, but it is an element that goes into steampunk. For example, urban fantasy is the same thing, that juxtaposition. The mundane and the supernatural. Superheroes, the mundane and the supernatural. It's all about this juxtaposition in the narrative elements. It's not something unique to steampunk, but it is certainly something I think that's part of steampunk's DNA.
Yeah. Well, I mean, steampunk's DNA is cyberpunk, and then you've got all of the other punks that offshoot.
Yeah.
Well, what I mean by when I say that steampunk's DNA is cyberpunk is that the term was coined from it, and the elements are the same, even if it wasn't intentional.
Well, the term was definitely coined from it, but I find cyberpunk to be very, very different from steampunk. And I've read both. The thing they have in common is not helpful to this conversation, because what I want to say is I know it when I read it or I see it. This is cyberpunk. This is steampunk, and they're not the same.
See, though, that's actually proving my point exactly. There is no hard codified rules, because it's entirely subjective.
But we all know it when
you see it.
Yeah. You read a cyberpunk book, you know it's cyberpunk. You read a steampunk book, you know it's steampunk. You read a dieselpunk book, and you...
That one crosses the line.
Diesel punk, atom punk, mage punk, solar punk,
biopunk. Because of how close it is to steampunk, you know, I could go either way on most of those books. Yeah. Those are not ones where I can truthfully say, I know this is diesel punk. I could just as easily call it steampunk.
So yeah, like I said, not to crib off of another panel, but... Where do you draw the line on the punks? Sometimes you can't.
Yeah, and there are times where you'll get aspects in steampunk that you're like, that seems more like it fits in with cyberpunk. Like you start getting into mechanical human augmentation, but with alternate Victorian tech. So you're like, what's going on here?
I've got one. I've got one that just proves the punks overlap. And it's one you love.
Which one?
Grim Dawn.
Yeah, I mean...
It's a little bit diesel punk. It's a little bit steampunk.
It's way post-apocalypse. But it's also Victorian. It's a video game that's set in basically a post-apocalypse Victorian era. And it has technology elements of diesel punk, it's steampunk and diesel punk. But it's also Lovecraftian horror. It defies trying to be put in a single genre box, which is part of why I love it.
And that's also part of the steampunk experience, because a lot of steampunk properties are not just steampunk.
Yeah.
there's elements of other things in there, and that's part of what makes it great. It's so versatile. It's so adaptable. But it is also part of the exact same reason why we don't have a codified hard list of this is what steampunk is. You know it when you see it.
Yeah. You could call Michael Crichton's novel The Great Train Robbery steampunk, even though it's really just straight up historical fiction. Right. But it has enough elements you'd be like, well, maybe it could classify as steampunk. But
the Red Dead Redemption franchise.
You may have heard of George Millier's The Voyage Down the Loop.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Would you consider that steampunk?
That's Joy to the Moon, right?
Yeah.
Oof. Oof. Ooh. Oh.
I mean,
yes, but no, but retroactively,
at least, I would say, because it falls into the... But
you know what? It's Schrodinger steampunk. That's my final answer. But yeah, as I was about to say, the Red Dead Redemption franchise, it's just historical fiction of the Wild West, but it carries a lot of the themes. Steam-powered automation, like trains and such. Expanding firearms technology, gearing up for, like, it was the end of the Civil War. You're now gearing up for World War I, where things start getting really wild. You've got this little gap window where firearms continue to evolve and change right before that rapid push that World War I gives them.
Yeah.
So you've got, you know, you still have revolving rifles that fell out of vogue as soon as we got the semi-automatic internal magazine. You've got the six shooter is still king until the 1911 comes along and goes, and the Mauser comes along, and they both just destroy the concept of taking revolvers into combat, except for a few cases like the Webley.
Which I'm just going to say something here that's going to make a lot of people hate me. Flintlocks are way out of date for steampunk. You're actually more accurate using a semi-automatic than a flintlock. You hate it, but it's true.
So there's a... Because of that, I think that it's still appropriate, although the percussion cap is superseded at that point.
Yeah. It's mostly a thing I like to joke about. That does
bring up real quick one final thing, one final property that you know I had to bring up the minute we started talking about flintlocks and pistols and stuff. Bloodborne.
Do not.
You can't stop me.
Look, we've got 5 minutes. If you're going to say something about it, do it.
Yeah, fine. Whatever. See how it is. I will remember this later.
Bloodborne falls into the category of steampunk as much as most of the other things we've talked about.
Yeah, it does. I got to give him shit because he will, any chance he has to bring it up, he will. Those are
really good points.
There's been a lot of great stuff for this episode.
There has. And the entire point of this episode wasn't necessarily to codify everything, but to illustrate that there is no way to codify anything. All of us as the hosts, you as the guests in the audience, have all put forward elements that are all valid definitions of steampunk, and yet there is no single correct definition of steampunk, which was the whole point of this panel.
Yeah. The whole point was that no matter how you try to define steampunk, there is something that is wrong that will show that your definition of steampunk is wrong, but it's also not wrong because there is no right definition of steampunk. Or there is no wrong definition of steampunk. Or
the important thing is we know it when we see it, and all of us here love it.
Now, I think there is one very important question that has to be asked.
Really? Really?
Is cyberpunk steampunk?
And I'm just going to go ahead and cut his mic right there. That's it for this week.
If you like what we do, please give us a like, follow, rating, all that nonsense in your favorite podcatcher. You can also support us on Patreon for special bonus content and episodes a week early, or tip us on Ko-fi. You can find those and our social media platforms and Discord server in the show notes. Last but certainly not least, we want to give a quick shout out to all of our supporters on Patreon and Ko-fi, especially these idiots. Random Warrior, Rain, and the perpetually banned Athen Mortis. You know what you did.